There was one person in the court who had not joined with the others when they gathered around Smoke Jensen. Nor had he left the moment court was adjourned. But while he hung around for a while longer, just to see what connection there was between Smoke Jensen and Captain King, Brad Preston stayed in the back of the court in order to make certain Smoke didn't see him. He knew that probably wasn't necessary. His encounter with Jensen had been so brief and so long ago that he was sure Jensen wouldn't remember it now. Earlier in the day, when both Manning and Waco Jones drank themselves into insensibility, the owner of the Gold Strike Saloon had the two men dragged out into the alley to sleep it off. Preston, who had drunk much less, left the Gold Strike and continued exploring the town. That was when he heard of the inquest into the shooting that had taken place a couple of hours earlier. Drawn by honest curiosity as well as morbid interest, Preston walked down to look through the hardware store window. There, in a plain pine coffin tipped up for better viewing, was the body of Dingus Pugh. He was wearing a jacket that was too small, as well as a stiff collar and tie. His arms were folded across his chest, and he was holding a white lily. Preston had seen such displays before. He knew that the clothes belonged to the Undertaker, and they were just for showing. He also knew that before that pine box was shut, the clothes would be removed. As Preston stood there staring at the body, he felt a chill pass over him. He knew this could very easily be his body lying there in a pine box. Once, 10 years ago, he had drawn his gun against Jensen, but before he could even get his gun out, Jensen had hit him on the head, knocking him out. Now that son of a bitch was here. He'd shot Pugh, and he was receiving accolades from those who attended the inquest. As Preston listened in on the conversation, he learned that Smoke Jensen intended to help Richard King. And if that was the case, this was information that Major Brandt would need to know. Once again, Preston checked in on Manning and Waco Jones, intending to tell them that they needed to get back to Concepcion. They were both still passed out in the alley behind the Gold Strike.
Manning, Waco, get up!
Preston kicked the sole of Manning's boot.
Manning, wake up!
No, go away.
Waco, get up! We gotta go back now.
No, I want another drink.
Preston stared down at him for a moment longer. Then he shrugged.
You two are worthless as tits on a boar hog.
He didn't have time to wait on him. This was news he had to get back to Major Brandt right away. Later that evening, as the annual square dance attracted the attention of most of the city, two men still lay behind the Gold Strike Saloon. But they were lying in the offal and refuge of the saloon, including the place where the spittoons were emptied, didn't seem to matter to them. Manning wiped at his face and then blinked his eyes a couple of times. Looking around, he saw that it was dark and that he was lying on the ground behind a building. Waco was with him. He sat up and then reached over to nudge Waco's shoulder.
Hey, Waco.
Waco didn't respond. Manning nudged him again.
Waco! You alive or dead? Get up.
Waco sat up and looked around him.
Damn. I feel like shit.
No wonder. We're lying out here in the alley like some damn drunk or something.
Where the hell are we?
I don't know exactly. But if I was to guess, I'd say we're out in the alley behind some saloon.
Which saloon?
The one we was drinking in, I guess.
Where's Preston?
I don't know. I ain't seen him since he went to the depot to meet that fella we were here to meet.
You mean Pugh?
Yeah, Pugh. Dingus Pugh.
I wonder if he got him.
Probably. What I'm wondering is if maybe Preston ain't the son of a bitch that put us out here.
Manning stood up and looked around for his hat. He found it and put it on.
Come on, get up. But you want to spend the night out here. You acting like you ain't never passed out drunk before.
Don't know as I have. Leastwise, I ain't never been passed out in no alley before.
Waco got to his feet. He'd been lying in the residue of several emptied spittoons, and he spent a moment brushing bits and pieces of tobacco from his clothes. He was unable to do anything about the brown stains.
What do we do now?
I don't know. Try and find Preston and Pew, I reckon. But I don't have an idea in hell as to where to start.
Manning and Waco Jones went back into the Gold Strike Saloon. They were surprised to see so few people inside. When they stepped up to the bartender slid down toward them.
I see you fellas sobered up. Back for another go-round, are you?
Yeah. Hey, how we wind up sleeping in the alley anyhow?
Why, how'd you carry it out there?
You're the one who done that?
Yes, but you don't need to thank me. I mean, you was both passed out on that table, and I figured you'd be more comfortable laying down than all slumped over like that.
Oh, you was, wasn't you?
Was what?
You was more comfortable laying down than slumped over on the table? Leastways, you looked like you was. I checked on you a couple of times just to make sure you was all right, and you was both sleeping like babies.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we was more comfortable.
Lots of barkeeps would just leave you at the table, but not me. No, sir, for me. It's a matter of pride that I take care of my customers as best I can, and I don't expect no tip or nothing, neither.
Well, that's good, because you ain't gonna get no tip from us.
That's all right. Like I said, I ain't expecting one. So, what can I do for you gents now that you have rejoined the land of the living?
Whiskey.
Same.
What happened to them other two fingers?
The bartender was looking at the three fingers on Manning's left hand.
They got bit off in a fight.
Damn.
Oh, that's okay. I bit off his ear.
It's a wonder you didn't kill each other.
Well, he was my brother, or I would have killed the sumbitch.
The two men took their glasses, then turned their backs to the bar and looked out over the nearly empty room.
Oh, your friend. He told me to tell you that he was going on back without you.
Our friend? You mean Preston?
Well, he didn't give me his name. He just asked me to tell you that he was going on back without you. Which is what I just done.
Both of them?
Both of them. Well, there was only the one that I saw.
I thought Preston come to pick up... What was that fella's name again?
Pew. Dingus Pew.
Yeah, Dingus Pew. Well, maybe he didn't make the train. That's why Preston went on back.
What was that name you just said? Did you say Dingus Pew?
Yeah. We were supposed to meet him here. If he made the train, that is.
Oh, he made the train, all right.
You seen him then?
Well, I've seen him. You can, too. If you walk down the street and look in through the window down to the hardware store.
What are you talking about?
Well, if you two boys hadn't been passed out drunk in the alley all day, you would know that a fella by the name of Dingus Pew got himself shot. He's laid out in the front window of the hardware store, all dressed up as pretty as you please.
The hell you say?
Go down there and you check it out if you don't believe me.
Son of a bitch. I wonder if Preston shot him.
Nope, he was shot by a fella named Jensen. Smoke Jensen.
Smoke Jensen, you say?
Yep.
Who is Smoke Jensen? I never heard of him.
Then you're a fool.
Say what?
Smoke Jensen is just about the most famous gunfighter there is.
Almost without any awareness of what he was doing, Waco loosened the pistol in his holster.
But there ain't never been a man that couldn't be beat. And someday, somebody's gonna put him down. I'll say this, whoever kills Smoke Jensen is going to get himself quite a name.
Waco looked around the saloon.
Damn, there wasn't hardly nobody here to see the show. Where the hell is everyone?
Well, they're all at the dance.
What dance?
Every month, especially during the summer. The cattlemen hold a dance down at the Dunn Hotel. It's supposed to be for the good of the whole town, but if you ask me, it ain't at all good for the saloons. Hell, everyone winds up down there and don't nobody come up here to any of the saloons. I think it's bad for business.
A dance, huh? Hey, Waco, what you say we go down there to that dance that barkeep is talking about?
What for?
Damn, Waco, use your head. If there's dancing down there, there's bound to be women. Wouldn't you like to be around some women for a change? Other than Becky, I mean?
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Let's go get us a couple of women.
Wait.
What?
We need to spiff up a bit. I mean, we're kind of dirty and stinky to be around women.
Oh, I don't know as we smell all that bad.
Oh, Believe me, you smell bad.
I don't smell no worse than you do.
We both smell bad. Got another shirt in your saddlebag?
Yeah, but it's the one I'd been wearing before I put on this here clean one to come to town in.
Well, put it back on. It's cleaner than the one you're wearing. You can wash up in the horse trough.
The two men left. Eddie the bartender walked over to look out, make certain they were gone.
Damn, I'd hate to see the woman who would take up with the likes of them two.
At the Dunn Hotel, the caller called his last call, the fiddler played his last few bars, and the music stopped. The dancers left the floor with Pearly and Cal escorting the two redheaded girls back to the area where they'd met them.
I'm Sue. Mrs. Jane, we're sisters. Are you two brothers?
Pearly looked at Cal and realized he was probably the closest thing to a brother he had. Smiling, he nodded.
Yeah. I don't like to claim him, but he's my brother.
Isn't this wonderful? We're sisters, and you're brothers, and here we are, together.
Would you like some punch?
No. Have you tasted that punch? It is awful.
Oh.
Cal was disappointed that yet another attempt to drink the punch had been thwarted.
I don't believe I've seen you two before. Do you work at one of the ranches?
We ride for the sugar loaf.
The two girls looked at each other in confusion.
The Sugar Loaf? I don't think I know it.
Well, it's just about the finest ranch there is all.
Reason you haven't heard of it is because it's up in Colorado. Well, sometimes my brother forgets some of the details.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I did forget to say that.
So, you've come all the way down here from Colorado? How fascinating.
Jane was batting long eyelashes at Cal.
Oh, yeah, it's a... fascinating, all right.
When Manning and Waco stepped into the hotel ballroom, a dance was already in progress. Out on the floor, couples moved and skipped, swayed and bowed as the music played. In addition to the dancers, there were several unattached men standing around the sides of the room watching.
Looks like there's a lot more men than women.
Manning nodded at a group of women standing together.
There's some women over there that ain't dancing.
Damn. No wonder they ain't dancing. They're uglier than a stump.
Waco looked around the room.
I'm thirsty. Ain't there no bar in this place?
There's a punch bowl over there.
Punch? You mean like fruit juice and stuff? Hell, I don't want punch. I want something to drink.
You ain't been to many things like this, have you?
I ain't never been to nothing like this.
Nothing? You mean you ain't never been to a wedding or a wake or nothing like that?
No.
Well, believe me, at things like this, punch ain't what you think it is.
The two men walked over to the table to get a cup of punch. Because they were so dirty and odorous, people moved away from them like Moses parting the water. Neither Manning nor Waco noticed the reaction they were getting, or if they did notice, they paid no attention. Waco got a glass of punch and smiled after he took the first swallow.
Oh, you're right. This here ain't half bad.
The set ended and the couples left the floor. Waco finished his drink and then wiped his hand across his mouth.
What do you say we go get us a couple of good-looking women?
You got someone in mind?
Yeah. How about them two red-headed ones over there?
Can you really see snow on top of the mountains?
Sure can. All year long.
Oh, I would love to see such a thing. I've never seen mountains so high. I've never even seen snow. It must be beautiful.
I reckon it's pretty if you're looking at it from long ways off. If you're standing hip deep in it, trying to mend a fence to keep the wolves away from your cows, well, it can get downright miserable. And I've done that a lot of times.
Oh, I think that would be very exciting.
Hey, you two good-looking women. My name's Waco, and this here fella is called Manning. What are your names?
Cal looked over at the speaker. There were two men standing there, one about his age, the other a little older. He noticed that the older one was missing two fingers on his left hand. Although Cal was irritated by the intrusion, he knew that neither he nor Pearly had any claim on Sue and Jane. It was up to them to respond in whatever way they wanted, but neither Sue nor Jane made any response at all.
How about leaving them dumb-looking galoots and coming with us?
This time, Jane very pointedly turned her back on Waco.
Hey, don't you turn your back on me when I'm talking to you?
The man reached to grab Jane by her shoulder and jerked her around roughly. Reacting almost before he thought, Cal swung his fist, catching Waco on the point of his chin and knocking him down. By now, the fracas had caught everyone's attention, and everybody looked over to see what the hell was going on.
Oh, sorry about knocking you down like that, mister.
Cal stepped forward to offer his hand to help Waco back on his feet.
But that wasn't very polite of you to grab that young lady like that.
Scowling at Cal, Waco let him help him back to his feet. Then the scowl turned to an evil smile as he stared at Cal with his hand hanging loosely over his pistol.
Draw, old mister.
Well, now that's gonna be pretty hard to do, isn't it? I ain't wearing a gun.
Get yourself one. Get one from your dumb-looking friend there.
Waco nodded toward Pearly.
I'm not carrying a gun either.
What kind of coward doesn't carry a gun?
This is a hotel ballroom, not a saloon. Gentlemen don't come to places like this carrying a pistol.
Turning, Waco saw a man who was somewhat older than the two he was accosting.
You do well to stay out of this, mister. You don't have a stake in this.
Yes, I do. You see, those two men happen to be friends of mine. The name's Kirby.
Kirby, is it? Well, who invited you into this, Kirby?
You might say I invited myself.
Moving his jacket to one side, Kirby disclosed the fact that he was wearing a pistol.
Ha! I thought you said gentlemen don't come to a place like this wearing a gun.
Well, see, that's the problem. I guess I'm not quite the gentleman I should be. I'm sure my wife would like me to be a bit more gentlemanly at times. Right, Sally?
Right, Smoke. Though even I will admit that this doesn't seem to be one of those times. When you are dealing with riffraff like this, you can be as unruly as you want.
Smoke? Did she call you Smoke?
Yes, well, maybe I should explain. My name really is Kirby. Kirby Jensen. But most folks, my wife included, call me Smoke.
You're Smoke Jensen?
Smoke nodded, but he didn't answer. Waco licked his lips, then he glanced over toward Manning. Manning was watching with interest, but it was very obvious that he was not going to take a hand in whatever was about to happen.
Look, I told you, this here ain't between us. This here is between me and this fella.
Smoke shook his head slowly.
But as you can see, I've sort of stepped in here to make it my business. So what's your next move? Do you draw on me? Or do you take your stinking carcass out of here so decent people can continue to have a good time?
Waco stood there for a long moment, trying to build up the courage to take the next step. Smoke followed the struggle in Waco's eyes, and he saw when he almost reached the courage it would take to pull his gun. He saw, too, when Waco lost whatever nerve he had built up. The anger, defiance, and courage drained flat out away.
Like I told you, this here ain't your fight.
Then, mustering as much defiance and maintaining as much dignity as he could, he turned to his friend.
Come on, Manning. Let's get out of here. There ain't nothing here but a bunch of cowards and fluffed up dandies.
The others at the dance watched in stunned silence as Waco and Manning left the ballroom of the hotel. A few, though not all of them, realized that they had just avoided seeing a deadly confrontation.
Well, let's get the music going!
That's the bravest thing I've ever seen.
Jane took Cal's arm in both her hands. She looked up at him with large blue eyes that could melt butter.
My Smoke is pretty brave, all right.
No, silly, I'm not talking about Mr. Jensen. I'm talking about you. You defended my honor, even though he was armed and you weren't.
Yeah, you did me proud.
Cal beamed as he escorted Jane out onto the floor for the next dance. Smoke and Sally stayed out of this one because the sheriff came over to talk to Smoke.
Do you know that man?
No. Should I?
Probably not. His name is Waco Jones. He's very fast with a gun and has killed at least 7 men that I know of.
Well, why isn't he in jail?
So far, every killing's been ruled as justifiable homicide. Though on at least half of them, they say he goaded the other man into drawing first. Word is, he's trying to build a reputation.
I've run across his kind before, and I'm sure I'll run across his kind again.
Be careful, Mr. Jensen. I have a gut feeling about these things, and I'm pretty sure you'll run across him again.
You think he wants to put my notch on his gun handle, do you?
I'd bet on it.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't take you up on the bet. I think you might be right.
Smoke?
I know, you don't have to tell me.
But I'm going to tell you anyway. Please, be careful.
Just out of town, Three-Fingered Manning and Waco Jones were riding through the night, their way lighted by a very bright full moon.
What is it you're laughing at?
Oh, I ain't laughing at nothing.
They rode on for a few moments longer.
I asked you what it was you was laughing at.
Well, I thought she's gonna show everyone how you was faster than Smoke Jensen.
I am faster.
I seen how much faster you was.
Tonight wasn't the right time or place is all.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't.
I couldn't have killed him in there with all those witnesses. I mean, even if it had been a fair fight, you know half the folks there would say I drew first.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. Of course, the thing is, if you had drawn down on him, you wouldn't be needing to worry none about what any of the witnesses would have said, because you'd be dead.
Waco spurred his horse so that it leaped forward several feet. Then he spun it around so he was facing Man.
All right, you think I'm slow? Maybe you'd like to try me, unless you're afraid of me.
Oh, I'm not afraid of you.
You ought to be.
I don't think so. If anyone should be scared, it should be you.
Me? Scared of you? Now why should I be scared of you? What was that?
Manning pulled his poncho to one side, revealing the fact that he was holding a double-barreled shotgun leveled toward Waco.
The clicking sound you heard was the reason you should be scared of me. Now I'm fixing to blow your ass to hell and back.
Manning raised the shotgun to his shoulder.
No! Hold it! Manning, wait! Look, I didn't mean nothing by all that talk drawn against you. Can't you take a joke? I was just fun with you, Zol.
I don't like jokes, and I'm not funning.
Manning continued to hold the shotgun on Waco, twin barrels unwavering.
Manning, please.
Manning lowered the gun.
Look, kid, I'm a lot older than you are, and I've run across a lot of fast guns in my day. Most all of them faster than me. But I'm still alive. You want to know the reason I'm still alive?
Yes?
The reason I'm still alive is I don't play games. If I think someone is a threat to me, I kill them. I don't face them in a fair fight, because I don't care about getting myself some kind of reputation. All I care about is staying alive. You understand that?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad you do. Because I'm telling you right here and right now, if you plan to keep on playing this game with me, then I am going to shoot you. And I guarantee you, I will kill you.
You don't want to do that. I mean, it's like Major Brandt said, we're all on the same side.
And no more talk about how fast you are. Otherwise, whether you're sleeping, eating, or shitting, you're going to have to be looking over your shoulder. You get my meaning?
Yeah. Now, put that scattergun away.
Thank you, but I'll just keep it handy for the rest of our ride back.
When Richard King started back home on the following day, his entourage drew quite a bit of attention. He, Kleberg, Smoke, Cal, and Pearly were on horseback. Henrietta, Alice, and Sally were in a Concord coach. In sturdiness and construction, it was the same kind used on the commercial stagecoach lines, though this one had been built with deep cushioned leather seats and tapestry on the floors and walls. The doors of the coach had glass windows that could be rolled up or down. The exterior glistened with several coats of burgundy lacquer. King's personal brand, the Running W, was gold embossed on either door. Pulled by six horses, the coach had a driver and an armed guard. Sally's horse was tied on behind the coach. Three wagons carrying luggage and purchases followed the coach. Two men were in each wagon, and four more rode on horses behind the wagon. The entourage stretched out for a city block. The editor of the newspaper took a photo of them just before they left, then hurried back to develop it so he could have a woodcut artist reproduce the photograph so he could run the picture in a future issue. Sue and Jane came down to see him off. Pearly and Cal, seeing the two girls in the crowd, rode over to speak with him.
We certainly had a nice time dancing with you two boys.
Will you be coming back for the dance next month?
I don't know. More than likely we won't be back, but we had a good time too, didn't we, Cal?
Oh, we sure did. Jane, I think you're about the prettiest girl I ever danced with.
Oh, my. I'm sure that isn't the case, but it is certainly sweet of you to say so.
All right, let's head them out.
The train started out. Finally, they reached the edge of town, then started west along Rogers Road. As they rode along the road, bound for the Santa Gertrudis Ranch, King pointed out all the points of interest. Meanwhile, back in the coach, Sally painted a smile on her face and listened to the conversation and gossip of Henrietta and her daughter. From time to time, Sally would gaze wistfully through the window, catch a view of Smoke or Pearly or one of the others on horseback, and wish that she could just say goodbye to the ladies in the coach and join them. When they reached the little town of San Diego, they left the public road and started south on a road that was built, owned, and maintained by the San Gertrudis Ranch.
Where have you two been?
Manning and Waco walked into the Gato Rojo Saloon in Concepcion the next day.
We was in Corpus Christi with Preston. Listen, your man Pugh got himself killed. I don't know where Preston got off to, but...
Manning stopped in mid-sentence when he saw Preston leaning back against the bar watching him.
What in the hell are you doing here?
You two was passed out drunk. Pugh's dead, and I didn't see no need in hanging around any longer.
Yeah, well, maybe if you had stayed longer, you'd know who killed Pugh.
Waco turned to Brandt.
It was Smoke Jensen.
Oh.
That's why I came back early. I figured Major Brandt needed to know about Jensen.
Well, I figured he might be interested. But I don't know as he needs to know.
You don't think he would need to know that Jensen has come down here to help King?
Smoke Jensen has come down to ride for Richard King?
Yes.
I don't believe it. Why would he do something like that? You must be wrong.
I heard it with my own ears.
Good. That'll give me another chance at him. And this time, there won't be a lot of his friends around him. It'll just be the two of us.
Preston and Brandt looked at Waco, who had a confused expression on his face.
What the hell are you talking about? This time it will be just the two of you?
Me and Smoke Jensen nearly had us a fight. Only things wasn't quite right, so I didn't draw on him. He didn't seem to want to fight, and we were standing in the middle of all his people, so I didn't push him that much.
You don't say. Well, it's lucky for you that you didn't push him. Otherwise, you wouldn't be standing here right now.
Yeah, the time will come. You'll see.
One of Brandt's men came into the saloon just then.
Arnie, come on over.
Arnie walked over to the table where Brandt and Stone were sitting.
What did you see?
There's maybe 300 or 400 head down on the South Range, several miles away from anyone else. I think they're getting ready to push them up north to join with the herd they'll be taking on the drive to Kansas.
Good. Good. Good work. Get yourself a beer on me, then get ready to go back.
The expression on Arnie's face indicated that he clearly did not expect to have to go back. He had ridden 20 miles today already. He was tired.
All right. Thanks for the beer.
Sergeant, call assembly.
Yes, sir, Major.
In an area that Captain King called the Veteradero Meadows, one of his cowboys, Juan Arino, saw some riders moving several cattle to the south. Thinking that Ramon might have sent some men to help with the roundup, he shook his head. Whoever they were undoing the work that Juan and his friends had spent the last few days doing. The cattle were supposed to be driven north, not south. Juan started riding toward them to see who they were and to tell them that they were making a damn mistake. As he drew closer to the riders, he realized that he didn't recognize any of them. These weren't St. Gertrudis riders. Who were they? What were they doing on Captain King's land? Suddenly, Juan had a bad feeling about this and pulled his horse to a halt. These men weren't making a mistake. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were rustling cattle. Juan didn't know whether to stay and watch for a while longer to see if he could determine where they were going with the cattle, or if he should get back to the others and tell them what was happening. Looking around, he saw a man on a horse holding a rifle to his shoulder. Juan felt the bullet go deep into his chest, and he was tumbled from his horse.
Son of a bitch.
Preston slid his rifle back into the saddle sheath.
Did you folks see that shot? Hell, it had to be 500 yards at least.
Brant rode up then.
Manning, you and Waco ride down there to where he came from and make sure there's nobody else coming. We got $2,000 or $3,000 on the hoof here, and I wouldn't want anything to happen that would keep us from collecting.
All right, Major. Come on, Waco.
The two men rode at least 3 miles before they came upon a cow camp. There were three men sitting around a fire. When they heard Waco and Manning approaching, they stood and faced them.
¿Quién es usted? ¿De dónde se Juan?
Speak English.
Waco swung down from his horse to face the three men. He noticed that all three were wearing pistols.
Who are you? Where is Juan?
Juan is dead.
Muerto?
Dead, yes. And I killed him.
That wasn't exactly true. It was Preston, not Waco, who shot Juan. But for Waco's purposes right now, it didn't matter who killed Juan.
You killed him?
Yeah. What are you gonna do about it?
Waco stared at the three men, a mirthless smile on his face. It took the three men a moment to realize that they were being challenged. How could that be? Was it possible that one man with his pistol still in his holster was challenging all three of them?
Ahora!
All three Mexicans went down, mortally wounded. Not one had managed to get off a shot. Waco held his smoking gun for a moment as he looked at the bodies of the three men he had just killed. Then he twirled the gun a couple of times before putting it back in his holster. Gun smoke from the three discharges drifted across the area. Some even wisped up the end of the barrel at the bottom of his holster. Waco looked at Manning, who had watched the entire thing unfold. Manning had an expression of shock and awe on his face.
Mr. Manning, no scattergun?
Manning blanched in quick fear.
You know I could kill you now, don't you? I could kill you and say it was one of these boys who did it.
I reckon you could.
Well, don't worry. I ain't going to. What do you think of that?
Fastest damn thing I ever seen.
Faster than Smoke Jansen?
I don't see how he could be any faster.
Are you ready to take back what you said earlier about me being scared of Jansen?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
You ain't saying that just because you know I could kill you, are you?
No. I never seen anything faster than that.
Although King and his party had actually reached the ranch, they didn't make it all the way back to the house on the first day of their travel. They camped out on Chewarpin Creek that first evening, and the entourage was so well equipped that their supper was anything but the kind of fare one might normally expect while camping. Two of the men traveling with the entourage were cooks, and one of the wagons was carrying a cooking stove and oven. The cooks prepared salt pork with fried apples and potatoes, sliced cucumbers, and a black walnut chest pie.
Look at Pearlie, he is in hog heaven.
Pearlie didn't even hear the comment, so intent was he on the food. During the meal, King entertained the others with the story of his past, which Smoke had to admit was as colorful as his own.
I was born in New York City on July 10th, 1824, to Irish parents who didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it through.
King continued his story, telling about how he ran away from his indentured servitude, stowed away on a ship, and wound up buying land in Texas.
but that was during my adventurous years. I've calmed down a lot since then. The most exciting thing I do now is develop new breeds of cattle.
Yes, I've heard of the Santa Gertrudis breed. They say it's one of the finest breeds of cattle around.
It's a good breed, if I do say so myself. They are as sturdy as Longhorns, as meaty as Herefords. Right now, they bring top dollar to markets.
Which is why you're being targeted by rustlers, no doubt.
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you? But the ones who hit us didn't steal any cattle. They killed several head, but they didn't steal any.
Now, why would they kill your cattle and not take them?
To answer that question, you'd have to understand the minds of the men who did this.
Tell me about them.
Smoke, do we have to talk about such things tonight? The food is delicious and the company good. The night is beautiful. Couldn't we just enjoy the moment?
Sally's right. I don't mean to bring up any unpleasantness.
No, it's quite all right. I think it is something you should know, and there's no time better than the present to tell you about it. That is, with your permission, ma'am. The story does have its terrible moments.
Of course you can tell the story. If Smoke is going to help you, he's going to have to know as much about these people as he possibly can.
Thank you. I will tell the story in as delicate a fashion as I can.
Oh, nonsense. Smoke will tell you. I'm not faint of heart.
She's telling the truth there.
With supper finished and pipes and cigars lit, King began his story, telling of the raid against his ranch during the war.
I suppose that the ranch was a legitimate target. I was running the Union blockade to sell Confederate cotton to the British, and I was buying arms and ammunition to sell to the South. I didn't know I'd done that much for the Southern war effort, but it did catch someone's attention because we were the target of a raid by Union troops. Unfortunately, the leader of that attack was a man named Jack Brant. Major Jack Brant had a particularly nasty habit of using his sword to decapitate his victims, but not until he let his men rape the women and young girls. In all, he killed 23 innocent men, women, and children.
What happened to Brant?
Well, he went to prison. I thought he'd be hanged, or at the very least, given a life sentence.
But he's out now.
He's out. I checked with the authorities. He and Wiley Stone were released at the same time.
I take it Stone was one of the men with him.
Yes. Stone was his sergeant. I believe these same two men have come back to plague me.
You have any proof of that? He's the one who attacked your men.
No. All I have is a gut feeling.
I've known a lot of good men in my life, and I've learned to trust their feelings. So that's good enough for me.
I appreciate that. But what bothers me now is the fact that we're having cattle roundups back at the ranch. I've told Ramon to get as many cattle moved to the north end of the range as possible. I intend to cut 10,000 head out and drive them north.
How long will it take you to have your roundup and get the herd underway?
I think we should be able to get the drive started within 2 weeks. And during those 2 weeks, we will be pretty vulnerable.
Maybe we can figure out a way to make you less vulnerable.
Mr. Jensen.
Please, call me Smoke.
Smoke, I want you to know how much I appreciate this, especially when I was so dumb as to refuse to accept your help.
Think nothing of it. Just consider it one rancher helping another.
Later that night, two large tents were erected. One for Richard King and his family, along with Bob Kleberg, and the other for Smoke, Sally, Pearlie, and Cal. The tents were well ventilated and furnished with canvas cots so that the occupants didn't have to sleep on the ground. But the ranch hands who were riding with the entourage did sleep on the ground, or in the wagon.
Captain King is a very rich man, isn't he?
Sally spoke that night as they settled into their cots.
He's rich, I guess. But he's no richer than I am.
What? Well, how can you say that? Captain King has 1,000 acres of land, hundreds of thousands of acres, and who knows how many head of cattle. Now, unless Sugarloaf is a lot bigger than you have told me, Captain King is a lot richer than you are.
Well, my dear, I suppose it's all in how you measure wealth.
What do you mean? How many ways are there to measure wealth?
Well, you could say that because I have you, and my freedom to enjoy you, that I'm the wealthiest man in the world.
Oh.
Are you all right?
Yes, Smoke. I do believe that's the nicest thing you have ever said to me.
In the pre-dawn darkness, several riders appeared. Their leader held up his hand, and like the precision military formation they were, the riders came to a halt.
There they are.
You are sure that is King?
Yeah, I seen his coach while I was in town. That's it, right there.
The
Who else would be traveling with a coach, three wagons, and two big tents?
I think you are right. I believe it is, King.
What are we gonna do, Major? We going to attack? I thought you didn't want to kill him yet.
Sergeant Stone, you were in the war, same as I was. You know as well as anybody the battle plans are fluid and always subject to change.
Yes, sir.
Spread the men out and commence shooting upon my first shot.
Even before the fusillade that followed Brandt's signal shot, Smoke was out of his cot with his gun in his hand.
Out of your cots! Everyone! Get down on the ground and stay low!
Smoke could see flashes in the night as a veritable army was firing toward him. He didn't know how many were out there, but from the number of flashes and the rapidity of the firing, he knew that there were quite a few. Smoke chose one of the flashes and, taking a chance on the shooter being right-handed, he fired just to the right of the flame pattern. He didn't hear anything, he couldn't see anything. He was gratified to see that there were no more muzzle flashes emanating from that particular location. By now, Pearlie and Cal had also poked their heads and shoulders from under the tent, and like Smoke, they were returning fire. Smoke could hear other gunshots coming from King's Park, a very good demonstration coming from the cowboys who were accompanying the train. But also, he was gratified to hear shots from Captain King's tent. That meant that they were not above carrying the fight themselves. The firing continued very intensely for nearly a full minute.
Right flank, continue to put down cover fire. Left flank, pull back in an orderly withdrawal.
The incoming fire decreased by about half. Then that firing halted, to be replaced by shooting from further away. Smoke was surprised by the orderliness of the withdrawal. After a few minutes, there was no more incoming fire at all, though people within King's party were still shooting.
Cease fire! Don't waste any more ammunition! You're shooting into the dark! Anyone hurt?
Vincente is hurt.
I'll see to him.
Wait! Let me check the area first!
Pearlie, you go around to our people and tell them not to move around yet. All we need now is for someone to kill one of our own people.
What are you gonna do?
I'm gonna go out there and have a look around.
You're the one who'd better be careful then.
Yeah, you're right. Look, stop by everyone's post. Tell them I'm going to be out there, so don't get itchy.
All right. Hold up, Pearlie, I come with you. With both of us going, we can get to everyone twice as fast.
The two young men slipped through the front flap of the tent, then, running bent over, started along the line of wagons.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Smoke crawled through rocks, sand, and various types of cactus, his way covered by darkness, closing his mind to the pricks and stabs of everything from sharp-edged stone to long, very pointed cactus needles. The smoke moved through the night toward where he had heard the sound of guns. He could see puffs of white gun smoke hanging in the black air over where the raiders had been. He could almost smell the acrid bitterness of burnt powder. He moved closer, his unobserved approach as silent as the moon shadows. There, by the light of the moon, he saw two men waiting, staring toward the King encampment. The pullback had been a ruse.
Did you two men get left behind or what?
Both men turned toward Smoke and fired, but Smoke had moved after he called out to him. Smoke had a better target. As soon as he fired, he moved from his location again, knowing that the muzzle flashes would give him away to anyone else who might be hiding out. There was no more shooting, but Smoke remained quietly in his new location, sheltered behind a rock, hidden by the deep shadows of pre-dawn darkness. Gradually, the black turned to gray. Then the first pink fingers of dawn touched the mesquite, and the light was soft. And the air was cool. The last morning star made a bright pinpoint of light over a line of mountains, lying in a ragged line far to the west. A rustle of wind through feathers caused him to look up just in time to see a golden eagle diving on its prey. The eagle swooped back into the air, carrying a tiny desert mouse kicking fearfully in the eagle's claws. A Gila monster scurried beneath a nearby mesquite tree, which was itself dying under the burden of parasitic mistletoe. Smoke stayed where he was. Then, as the sun reached two fingers above the eastern horizon, Nearly every shadow was eliminated, and he could see two bodies lying on the ground. Then, something caught his eye. A movement behind a low-lying mesquite tree. He saw someone raise up and aim a rifle. And when Smoke looked in the direction the man was aiming, he saw that Alice King was standing just outside the King tent. That son of a bitch was about to shoot a woman.
Drop the gun!
Instead of dropping his rifle, the man swung it towards Smoke. The bullet was uncomfortably close, so close that it actually left a burn mark on Smoke's neck. Smoke returned fire, and the man threw up his rifle as he tumbled backwards. Smoke waited for a long moment before he exposed himself again. Then he heard someone coming, and with gun drawn, he swung toward him.
No, Smoke, it's me.
I told you to stay back there.
Well, we heard all the shooting. Miss Sally was going to come check on you herself. The only way I could get her to stay back was to promise her that I'd do it.
Smoke's irritation dissipated. He knew how hard it was to resist Sally once she made her mind up to something. He smiled.
Well, as you can see, I'm all right.
Pearly looked around at the bodies lying on the ground.
Yeah, well, that's more than we can say about these fellas, ain't it?
Yeah. I'll say this for them. They were determined. Come on, let's get back, unless you think someone might shoot us as we come in.
I told them to look for me at that rock over there.
Pearly pointed toward a rather large rock.
Good idea to tell them where to expect us.
It took no more than a couple of minutes to return to the encampment. Sally greeted Smoke with a welcoming kiss that was almost embarrassing in its intensity. He winced when she wrapped her arms around his neck. And startled by his reaction, Sally drew back to examine his wound.
You were hit.
Just a graze, no blood. Left me with a burn, like a rope burn.
Let me put some cold cream on it.
As the two tents were struck, Smoke sat on a wagon tongue, letting Sally apply cold cream to his wound. King came over to talk to him.
We heard a little activity out there this morning.
Yes. Three of them were left back. I think the plan was to open up on us once we thought we were safe and underway again.
Where are the three now?
They're still out there, but I don't think they'll be bothering anyone again.
Oh, I don't suppose they will either. By chance, none of them was wearing an army jacket, was he?
No.
Too bad.
Smoke saw that Vincente had been tended to and was now sitting up with his shirt off and a bandage wrapped around his upper arm.
How is he?
He'll be fine if he doesn't get the gangrene.
Was he the only one who was wounded?
Yes, but we lost a couple of horses.
By the way, I do believe you when you say that this man Brandt is the one behind all this.
You do? You saw him?
No, I didn't see him.
Well, then what makes you think he's the one behind all this?
I think this because of the way they withdrew this morning. I clearly heard the order from one half of the men to provide cover while the other half of them pulled back. It was a very precise maneuver. Add to the fact that they set up an ambush, and it makes me think the person we are dealing with has a military background.
Major Jack Brandt.
I think you're right.
Three men killed. We surprised an encampment of civilians in the middle of the night, and we had three men killed? We should have killed all of them without so much as a scratch, but we were lucky to get out alive.
Yeah.
You want to tell me just how the hell that happened? It was a perfect ambush plan. What could possibly have gone wrong?
Well, we was waiting back there, like you said, waiting for daylight so we could pick him off when they started out. Only he come out in the night to find us. It's like he knew we was going to be out there.
He came out. Who came out?
Jensen. Smoke Jensen. You know, he's the one I told you about.
How many men did he bring out with him?
He didn't bring nobody with him. It was just him.
Well, if he came out all by himself, why didn't you kill him when you had a chance?
You don't understand.
What is it I don't understand?
He's not just like one man. Fact is, he's not like anything I've ever seen before. We never really got a chance to kill him. I mean, Dewey and Houston, they got themselves killed right off. Then Evans, he got himself killed right after the first light. They left me as the only one.
How is it you weren't killed?
Because I wasn't about to show myself. Like I told you, by then I was the only one left. And any man who would go up against Smoke Jensen all by himself is a damn fool.
Who is Smoke Jensen anyway? I've never even heard of him.
Oh, he's just one of the most famous gunfighters there is all. How can it possibly be that you never heard of him? Why, they've even written dime novels about him.
I was in prison for over 15 years. We didn't get a lot of dime novels in prison.
Well, take my word for it, Major. Smoke Jensen ain't somebody you want to run up against alone.
I'm not afraid of him. I'll face him alone.
Really?
You damn right I would.
Now, why would you want to do that?
Why, prove that I'm better than he is.
I am running a military organization here. I am not running a competition of personal accomplishments. I don't care whether you are better than he is or not. You do understand that, don't you?
Well, yes. Sure I understand that. I mean, I guess I understand it. But if you're worried about me getting killed or...
I'm not worried about you getting killed. Individually, you mean nothing. Collectively, you are part of my army, and I don't want my army weakened, even by one more.
Yeah, but if someone would just take care of Smoke Jensen for you, you could.
You do want to stay with us, don't you, Jones?
Yeah, of course I do.
Then not another word about you and this man Smoke Jensen having your own personal battle. A pretty good general for the other side once said that you win battles by getting there fastest with the mostest. That is the principle by which I am running this organization. We will win all of our battles with overwhelming military superiority, not with some brash young fool out to make a name for himself. You will make no effort to face this man by yourself.
All right. But I just want you to know, I want everyone to know, that I am not afraid of Smoke Jensen.
You are an idiot. An absolute idiot.
Waco seethed at Brandt's words, but he knew there was nothing he could do about it. And even though he could draw his pistol and kill Brandt in a heartbeat, he was surrounded by nearly a dozen of Brandt's men. This was a vivid example of Brandt's principle of overwhelming military superiority.